Hello and welcome to another episode of Corporate Buzz. I'm your host, Keerthana Tiwari, and I have Money Control's Corporate Bureau Chief, Prince Thomas, with me to talk about the top corporate news of the week. Hi, Prince. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Keerthana. Hi.
Prince, on Thursday, TCS reported their quarter two results, and they have reported a profit of 7,400 crore, and this is a sequential growth of 6.7%. Can you talk more about this, and you know, can you give us a context of this growth?
I think the interesting part was that, you know, it was better than expected, and so despite people otherwise also expecting IT companies to do better. Because mostly we have seen traditionally that when a crisis happens, the first to bounce back or the recover are sometimes the IT companies. And if you would see the way the news was getting generated around IT companies, you know, their stocks have been doing exceptionally well. I think we also did stories saying that, you know, the stocks have been up 50% in the last 6 months. And then there was also news on them beginning to hire again. So there's a lot of positive news, and then the deals also. The frequent announcements by IT companies on deals. So one would gather that things are getting better for IT companies. But despite that, TCS has done even better than what it was generally expected. So it's a pretty good start to the earnings season. And I think also probably befitting is that TCS said it will start giving hikes to its employees, you know. I think it is probably the first IT company, and overall India is probably the first company to formally say that it's going to give hikes. I think in many companies, the first step would be to take back the pay cuts and then probably look at hikes. But I think TCS had frozen all the hikes. Measures earlier this year. So it has now going back to giving hikes to employees. So overall, a good start to the quarterly season, I think.
Right. And also, Prince, this news is just in, actually. TCS is now the most valued IT services company. It has surpassed Accenture.
That's right.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think this goes up and down. I think I'm not sure of the timeline, but maybe a year or two ago, also TCS had gone higher than Accenture.
Okay.
And then again, Accenture went back to the top. I think we have to wait for some more time to see how permanent this is going to be, you know, how long TCS is going to be number one. But I think the overall tenor is same, that, you know, stocks have been doing well, IT companies are getting better deals. And I think it's symbolic of that, of TCS, you know, getting, going higher than Accenture in terms of market cap. You know, after TCS, we would be seeing, other IT companies, including Infosys, Wipro, and HCL Tech also coming out with their results. Mm-hmm. And I think, hopefully, I would expect these companies also to report, decent numbers. So, I think, this is going to be how it's going to be for IT companies.
Right. And related to this, we again saw, earlier this week, we again saw another change in the H-1B visa rules.
That's right.
Has there been any major changes, and will that again affect IT companies?
Yeah, so the U.S. government has kind of, has come up with a suggestion, and it's like, it's called the interim final rule. So
okay.
I think it's kind of a, like in India, you have the government proposes something, and then there is enough time for people to give feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the same. So it's like an interim final rule where the government waits for 60 days for the feedback to come in, or, something similar before really bringing it into effect. So for H-1B, it's going to be, it is impactful, you know, because the new rule, if it comes in the way it is right now, there will be, I think there are three important points. I think one is that the whole definition of specialty occupation will kind of narrow down. That means the ability for Indian IT companies to really, they'll have find it now tougher to specify a job vacancy in this specialty segment.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have to do even more to prove that it is indeed a specialty occupation for which they need to get talent from outside US, and that talent is not available locally in the US.
Okay.
So that is the main thing. And also, the whole documentation that is going to be required by companies will also increase. Uh-huh. And the rule also gave a lot of power to the administration to come and take inspections. So they can even now come to the office sites and check if, you know, the paperwork, the employees, all are according to what they are claimed to be. So overall, this is being done to, you know, the whole, you know, we know that Trump and the Republicans, as we get into the election, you know, month, they have been very vocal about H-1B and the whole idea around generating more jobs or saving jobs for the U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. So they are making it even more difficult for companies to get people from outside the U.S. for these positions. So it will surely be little more difficult for Indian IT companies to, you know, send employees from India to the U.S. to for these positions.
Is it the first time that they're coming up with such a rule? I mean, has there been any similar rules in this in the past?
It's very difficult to say, but the tightening that we're seeing in terms of H-1B visa, and it's just not H-1B, in other visas also we have seen some bit of tightening happening. Overall, the message has been that it will become stricter. Mm-hmm. And it's not just this, even the wages will increase now. I think that has also come up recent, where I think the wages will have to be increased by up to 40% or a little more than 40%. So there also, if IT companies intend to send someone, or, you know, they have a rethink on all these measures. So we have to see how IT companies react to it. They have been saying that they've been reducing their dependence on H-1B and they're recruiting more locally. If that is the case, then I think it is serving the purpose of what the U.S. government is intending these for. So I think increase, and if the Republicans do come back and Donald Trump does come back for a second term, I think this is going to be the way it is, unless the Democrats win and they ease the conditions a bit.
Okay. Let's see how everything turns out.
Yes.
Speaking about the aviation sector, there has been some news in the front of the Jet Airways bid. Mm-hmm. And the Calrock Capital, a UK financial service company, they have contested a statement made by one of their senior officials. And the official had said that the company won the bid for Jet Airways.
That's right.
This statement has been contested. So can you tell us what exactly happened there?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of buzz because, you know, the fact is that the lenders to Jet Airways, they have started evaluating the two bids. So there are two bids. One is from the consortium led by Calrock Capital, mm-hmm. and the second is led by FSTC. And ever since the voting started, there have been buzz that, you know, the results will come now. And the same thing happened. The whole buzz started on Twitter with some people saying that Calrock has won the bid and that announcement may come soon. And then this report comes up quoting the Calrock official. But I think within hours, as soon as, you know, it was early morning on Thursday, I think, Calrock gave a statement saying that it's not so and that its official has been misquoted.
Right.
And even the Jet Airways announcement came later on saying that the voting still continues and it may continue till October 16th. Mm-hmm. The fact is that the buzz and the excitement around the, you know, the news or the voting is very evident, and it's because many of the former employees of Jet Airways are looking forward to the results.
Mm-hmm.
And one should remember that this process of insolvency process has been on for more than a year, probably one of the longest insolvency cases in India.
Right.
And Jet has been grounded since April last year. So the wait has been long, and there have been immense numbers of delays, extensions, twists and turns in the whole insolvency process. So I think everyone is eagerly waiting for the voting to get over and finally for one owner to be announced, new flares. So I think that's what it is building up to, and that's what the excitement is all about.
Right. And what is expected to happen next in this case?
So what happens is, if the voting does continue till 16, to win the bid, one of the proposals will have to get a minimum of 60% of the votes of the banks. So as soon as the proposal gets that, it will be the winner. And then it will, the whole process of handing over the reins of Jet Airways and then bringing into effect the proposal that was cleared by the lenders. And then there are a lot many loose ends, you know, how much haircut the banks are going to get, will have to take. How much, and banks have about 8,000 crore rupees of exposure to Jet Airways. And the airline otherwise overall has a claim, faces a claim of about 40,000 crore.
Right.
So these are employees who have not got their salaries, their pension. And these are vendors, suppliers who haven't got their payments.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the whole question about what the new owner is going to do, how many aircraft is going to deploy, what is the kind of routes that it will start operations on. So there are many, many, many question marks that will be there. But then the first step is for the new owner to come in. And that's why I think there is a lot of eagerness. And people also want to know, as we clearly know that aviation, even though things are improving, it's still, you know, in a pretty delicate state.
Right.
So there are people who have lost jobs too. So there's also interest about how many people will find their jobs back in Jet Airways. So many issues around it. So that's why the excitement.
Right. And would there be like any advantage or disadvantage for the new owner when they come back to the, runway? Because like for now that we are seeing, like you mentioned, overall the aviation sector is, you know, it was hit badly by the pandemic and now it's slowly coming back up.
That's right. No, so they're both a good thing and bad thing about it. And now the bad thing, like you said, is that the demand, even though it's improving, is still nowhere close to the pre-COVID-19 levels.
Okay.
You know, so, and there are still restrictions in travel. Customers are still wary because of the whole safety aspect of traveling right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing is that many of the costs have gone down, you know, from leasing an aircraft, so the leasing rates have gone down.
Mm-hmm.
The fuel prices, which is the biggest component for cost component for any airline, that is also relatively low.
Right.
And salary levels are low.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the major cost points will be, you know, kind of very conducive for any airline to restart.
Okay.
So that, in that way, it's a positive, probably a good time to start. And because it's Jet Airways, and we should remember that Jet Airways had an immense amount of loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also had a very good loyalty program. So there is immense curiosity around what the airline will look like once it gets back, what kind of services will be offered. We should remember that it was a full service airline, and only Vistara is there among the private airlines which provides full service.
Mm-hmm.
So the curiosity itself will lead to a lot of, I think, interest in Jet Airways. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, sure. Coming to the auto sector, we have been talking a lot about electric vehicles, and we recently have an article on Money Control which says that there has been a high demand in electric two-wheelers. The sale has grown 18% year-on-year. Can you talk about why specifically we are seeing this interest in two-wheelers in the electric vehicle space?
Yeah, sure. I think the most interesting part, you know, Gitna, is that this data is very, very unique because the industry body which has released the data, it never has been releasing data monthly like you have for the IC engines and the mainstream auto guys who release data every month.
Right.
We don't get any data for electric vehicles. We at most probably get a half yearly or a yearly number.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I don't know if it's the first time, but a very rare moment where you're getting a monthly number for electric vehicle sale.
Mm-hmm.
It could be because they have done very well and it's a good thing to talk about and they have come out with the numbers.
Right.
But irrespective of that, electric vehicles have done well and this is only two-wheelers. We don't know how the four-wheelers have done.
Mm-hmm.
But there has always been a genuine interest in electric vehicles, you know. One, it's very popular among youngsters. Second, the whole thing about it being clean and green also appeals to people. Probably the worrying part is one, the price, and then the whole, debate around charging it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the quality has been improving, the prices have also been reducing, it has all, I think, led to the increase in sales. And also we know that post the pandemic, people are looking to buy vehicles. They don't want to use public transport. So for those who can afford it, then I think they would be looking at electric vehicles as a very strong option. And
right.
That is probably the reason why the numbers have improved.
And also, would you say that many people are probably looking at two-wheelers as like, you know, this experimentation into electric vehicles?
Very well could be, you know. In four-wheelers, we have mostly seen that people who buy electric four-wheelers are those who already have one, you know, vehicle, and they are passionate about electric vehicles and vehicles in general, and they also can afford it.
Right.
In two-wheelers, I'm not sure if that is the case. It could also be a first-time buyer who is buying a two-wheeler and is buying an electric vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be a student, it could be a young professional, it could be, you know, anyone. So that is surely is a factor in here, and I think it's fueling the curiosity a lot.
Right. Let's see if there are any more such data in the future about electric vehicles.
Yes.
We are also seeing that cars and SUVs have also grown year on year for the month of September. Mm-hmm. Can you explain this growth?
Yeah, so the latest number that has come out is from the dealers. You know, what we usually get on the first of every month, the numbers, that is released by the companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is about what the companies supply to the dealers. Those are not of actual sales. This number that we have got from the dealers are the actual retail numbers. And an interesting part is that for the first time in 2020, and we're talking about the financial year, the sales of cars and SUVs in a month has surpassed the corresponding time a year ago.
Okay.
In other words, year on year. So this is the first time it's happening in FY 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a critical thing to note, and probably more important than looking at the numbers what the auto companies share. And that is very positive. And we are still in the middle of the festive season, and the hope would be that this will keep on increasing. We have seen that numbers shared by auto companies have shown a huge rise.
Right.
Not just, you know, quarter on quarter, but year on year. So they are expecting car sales to improve even further as we go deeper into the festive season. And that's what I think the indication we are getting from these numbers from the dealers.
Right. Thank you so much, Prince, for all these details.
Hey, welcome, Kitna.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Corporate Buzz. If you have any other queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to Money Control. Thank you for listening.